As I mentioned, the first part of the program was going to be about Alligator and these new artists. The second part, and we're going to be getting a phone call hopefully in about 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes from England, jolly old England, where we'll be talking with one of the true progressive rock greats, guitarist, keyboardist, songwriter, vocalist, Mr. Steve Hackett, formerly of Genesis. He has been revisiting his Genesis years of late and doing a lot of Genesis music. In fact, in 2019, he played live at the Hammersmith in England and did the entire Selling England by the Pound, a 1974 album, I believe it was, from Genesis, played it in its entirety, also gave us another album of that year that he had done. I take that back. It wasn't from that year. I'll have to figure out Spectral Mornings. When was this? That was 79. That was a few years later after he left Genesis. And he gives us that album in its entirety as well. So Selling England by the Pound from 74 and Spectral Mornings, a solo Steve Hackett album, both recorded in their entirety back-to-back live at the Hammersmith in 2019. And he tossed in a few additional songs from his most recent album as well, At the Edge of Light, which came out in 2019, 2018. We'll find out specifically when we talk to Steve. But it's live. It's good stuff. The quality for a live recording, I've got to say, it's beautifully recorded. And you're being privy to it because it doesn't come out until September of this month. So it's going to be a while till you can actually go and buy it. But we, through Steve's people, have got a copy. We're going to share some of these songs with you. And I think we'll start with one by request. When we announced that we were going to have Steve joining us, we had a couple of fans chime in with some of their favorites when we told them about the songs we were going to play and the fact that this was Steve's new album. So there's a song that's off of the Selling England by the Pound album. And this is the live version of it. It was track two on the original album called I Know What I Like, In Your Wardrobe. And, Jose, who is this going out to?
This is going out to my buddy and big fan of the older Genesis, Skyler.
All right, Skyler, this one's for you, and I hope you stick around because Steve will be joining us, and maybe we'll find out what this song's all about. I hope you're wearing your best wardrobe right now.
Thank you. When the sun beats down and the lion depends, I can always hear them talk. Me, I'm just a lawnmower, but you could tell me by the way I walk.
And the crowd goes wild for Mr. Steve Hackett, one of the great prog rock guitar players. Oh, what the heck. One of the great guitar players of rock and roll in general. Whether he's playing acoustic, nylon string, or electric, whether he's rocking out or doing some of the proggier stuff, he's just phenomenal. I remember meeting him. Clive Davis actually introduced me to Steve. I'm sure he wouldn't remember it, but it was back when they were doing GRT, do you remember that band? It combined Steve Hackett along with Steve Howe. It was the Steve and Steve show. Steve Howe, Steve Hackett from Yes. And what an interesting album that was. GRT, which of course is the abbreviation for guitar. If you're a sound man, you put GRT on your soundboard, and that means that's the guitar channel. So interesting stuff there. That was a long time back. But one of the highlights of that era of my career was getting to hang out with those guys when they released the album GRT at a party that Clive had thrown back when being in the record business was way cool, and there was parties all the time, and we weren't hiding away in the basement wearing masks. All right. That is going out to Skylar. That is a song that was actually, the song itself, not that version, was a single from the album Selling England by the Pound, which is the fifth studio album from prog rock band Genesis, released in October of 1973 on Charisma Records. And it was the first time that Genesis actually broke the top 30. It was a hit single in the UK anyway. I'm not sure how well it did in America. But it was written, as all of the stuff was credited back then, to Tony Banks, Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, Steve Hackett, and Mike Rutherford, who were the core of Genesis. What a great band they were. Band we don't talk about nearly as much as we used to or as we should. Steve, of course, left the band after a while and went solo and has released a plethora of incredible music. So we're going to play one from his most recent album, his most recent solo album.
I don't belong here, so don't tell so out loud. Easy love is the safe way home. Thankful for a fine fat discount. Tesco operates.
Isle of Plenty, Steve Hackett live at Hammersmith. Again, this album that we're featuring is not available to you yet, but you lucky NPR listeners are getting a chance to preview some of the selections here and there. And it is coming out in September of 2020, and it was recorded last year. Again, this is an incredible collection. Selling England by the Pound, which of course is a classic Genesis album, their fifth studio album released in 73. And we're listening to that. He also recorded in the same concert, Spectral Mornings, a 1979 solo album, one of many solo albums that Steve has given us. And he also has a new album called At the Edge of Light, which came out last year. And we're going to get to something from that. Beast in Our Time is one of my favorites off that. And we're going to try to get to that in just a bit. But right now, joining us, Mr. Steve Hackett. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Tom. Nice to talk to you. How are you doing?
Doing great. It's been a while. Last time I talked to you was probably around 2011. And,
oh, it could be.
Yeah, it was a while back. And I was talking about, right before we brought you on here, before we played that song, Isle of Plenty, that Clive Davis actually introduced me to you when GRT came out, or GTR.
Right. Interesting. Yes. Well, of course, he was heading up Arista at the time, and Clive did a great job promoting GTR with the single When the Heart Rules the Mind, which I guess is the thing that most people remember from that band, which I shared with Steve Howe, two guitarists with the same initials, SH and SH.
Right.
And, they did a great job on that. Funnily enough, I re-recorded that track with another guitarist in recent times, from Marillion, Steve Rothery. So, it's been great to revisit that along with other things over time.
So you've got another Steve in the mix then when you do that.
Yes, exactly. There's an awful lot of Steves that play guitars these days.
Wow. GTR, of course, as I mentioned, is the basically what you write on the soundboard if you're a sound engineer, which is short for guitar. And what a perfect name for a band. To my knowledge, though, you only did the one album in 86, and that was it. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did one album, and then there was a live album, I believe, from... It was either the Shrine in L.A., and there was, I think from that, and there was also a live video or two that was available, I think from a show we did in Germany. But really, there was only one studio album, and there was talk of the band reconvening, and I spoke to some of the other guys but who were keen to do it, but I think Steve Howe was less keen to do it. So so far it's a dormant proposition, but
okay,
you never know with these things. Sometimes they come back and with the originals or slightly altered form. It's only really in America that I get asked questions about GTR, as it really made less of an impression over here, but at the time when MTV was kind of riding high, the god of the media that was MTV at the time, if you found favor with that, then there was a chance that people would notice what you were doing. And luckily, we found favor at that time, which was in the mid-1980s, of course. You know, this is
right.
This is a while back now. This is 35 years ago.
Right. And speaking of the past, you have been sort of reinventing yours and revisiting it. You have a new book out, which I want to talk about in a bit, but you did the Genesis Revisited live concert and album release about a year or so ago. And now coming up next month, we've got the Selling England by the Pound and Spectral Mornings live at Hammersmith album. What's inspired you to go back and take some of these albums? And I remember you saying when we last spoke that Selling England was one of, if not your favorite, Genesis albums that you were part of.
You've got a very good memory there. You're quite right. Selling England is my favorite, and it comes from a time when, although we were a young, struggling band at the time in 1973, John Lennon gave an interview in New York and said that we were one of the bands that he was currently listening to, and so that's always been a proud moment for me, and it's always made me reevaluate not only Genesis but also that album at that time when we were, you know, struggling to find a style and to find an audience.
Mm-hmm. So why that album at this point? Was the revisiting Genesis the kind of what lit the fuse to go back and start reconnecting with your past?
Well, to be honest, I wanted to do a Grand Slam show. It was the 40th anniversary of Spectral Mornings last year, so I was honoring that by doing quite a bit of stuff from that album. And I wanted to be able to do the whole of Selling England by the Pound, as it was my favorite album, for no other reason. But I thought, in a way... but there were a number of favorites, and I was also saying at the time, you mentioned At the Edge of Light, and at that point last year, those three albums were very much my favorites from all the rock stuff I'd been involved with, you know, from both Genesis and solo stuff that was back in the 70s from a similar era, but also up to the present day, 2019. Last year, a lot of people were drawing comparisons between Spectral Mornings and At the Edge of Light. There was a sort of sense of the complete journey that went throughout those two albums. So in many ways, they spoke to each other, even though they were 40 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it was a very... Not only was I touring that at that time, but it stretched over. And so we were due to do many more concerts this year of Selling England by the Pound. Unfortunately, we had to cancel, of course, like just about every other act.
Right.
We were halfway through our American tour, and everywhere was closing down. state after state. We were due to play on Cruise to the Edge, along with Yes and Marillion and various other acts. That all was cancelled, but rescheduled to next year. All we can do is say to people that we honor all the tickets that people bought to see the show this year. We'll be honoring as soon as we possibly can. Officially, mm-hmm. we're supposed to be doing that from April onwards, when I was supposed to be fulfilling all the commitments of doing Selling England by the Pound, but also Seconds Out, which was going to be. We were going to be touring that at the same time. So Seconds Out is a live album from Genesis from 1977, where that album really was cherry-picking across the whole of the 1970s that preceded it. So
right.
All I can say is that we'll be fulfilling those commitments as soon as everyone else is allowed to fulfill their international commitments.
So it'll be kind of a hybrid set list, what you were doing with this Selling England and Spectral Mornings, plus you'll be adding in a few other different songs from that era of Genesis. Okay.
The whole of Seconds Out, basically. So luckily there is some crossover of Selling England and Seconds Out. There are quite a few things that crop up in that. Songs such as... Firth of Fifth and one or two others like Cinema Show, which are big stage favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in a way it's the best of all Genesis worlds for those who are interested in the 70s version of Genesis.
Let's talk a little about your band, because one of the things about this new album, this new live album from Hammersmith, is how quality the recording is. I mean, your engineers, kudos to them. Your engineer and your sound crew, top shelf. But your musicians and Nad Sylvan on vocals really carries these songs in a way. It's a masterpiece album. There's no denying it. But when
you
recreate it and you can do it justice as you have with this lineup, let's shine a spotlight on some of these folks. I'm not too familiar with these names. You got Jonas and Roger and Rob and Craig and, of course, Nad. Who are these folks? Where'd you find them?
Okay, well, there are two Swedish guys in the band. Nad is Swedish-American, American-Swedish. Jonas is, he's worked with the Flower Kings, but many other people along with Roynor Stoltz. Rob Townsend is basically a jazz professor, very well known in this country and internationally. Let me see, Roger King, amazing keyboard player, stroke engineer, producer, arranger, orchestrator, all of those things. I can't sing their praises high enough. And of course, Craig Blundell on drums, who mm-hmm. was playing with Stephen Wilson's band. But then he came on board with my stuff, and Stephen Wilson has also done the surround sound mix of the album. The stereo mix is Roger King.
Okay.
For the DVD stroke, Blu-ray, and so we get two different mixes of that. But I have to say, as a product in terms of the pure audio, I feel it's the best live album I've ever done,
mm-hmm.
With arguably the best band I've ever played with, although I have many people from previous bands that I was tremendously proud of. But I'm glad you said that you think that the playing is stellar on it. I think it is. That they are an amazing bunch.
Mm-hmm.
They are extraordinary.
And for a live recording, I mean, live albums traditionally are not all that in a bag of chips, as we like to say, but this one is pristine. Did you use some kind of new technology at all? I mean, because it's just so clean.
In terms of the recording, when Roger King masters things, never mind mixing,
mm-hmm.
He uses multi-band compression, so you are still able with a fixed mix to be able to favor certain things and to boost certain areas. And I noticed, funnily enough, I went and I was playing some of this stuff to my mother, and bless her, she doesn't have the best stereo system at home. You know, it's a bit boomy, and she's got, you know, one of the speakers stuck behind the television, you know, so one struggles to make things sound. But funnily enough, it sounded clear as a bell, and it really sounded great on that. So we know it's a portable mix. We know that it sounds good on not just great systems, but also systems that are left a little bit wanting. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing to find, is a portable mix that'll work on the most terrible systems in the world and sound great on a great system and great on a terrible system.
Right. Let's sample a little bit of one of my favorite songs. It's brilliant. It's a wonderful piece that showcases your guitar work, keys, and everything else. This is Spectral Mornings. We'll give you a little bit of this, folks, and we'll be back with Steve to talk some more. Spectral Mornings, that's the live version that's going to be coming out next month on Selling England by the Pound and Spectral Mornings live at Hammersmith. Mr. Steve Hackett is my guest. That is him and his incredible band giving us a sample of this album. And that album originally goes back to 1979, as you mentioned, the 40th anniversary last year. One thing that's consistent between the studio version, Steve, and the live version is your brother John. He is on both.
My brother is on he's on this album, actually. The stuff that he's on, funnily enough, it's on the other track, Virgin and the Gypsy, and on the original that we recorded in Holland, John did two takes on that with flute. He played two wooden flutes, very kind of Chinese sound on that, and he did two takes that we played back simultaneously. So when we did it live, we had both Rob Townsend playing flute and John. So John's playing alto flute, Rob playing concert flute. And I think it might have been whistle, maybe flageolet, something like that. But they sounded great together. And I've recorded a few things where you have two flute players working together, and it sounds absolutely wonderful.
One of the other members of your solo band that went on to do some amazing work and sadly stayed under the radar, never really got his day in the sun, is Nick Mangus. Tell me a little bit, are you doing anything with Nick anymore?
Yes, I do. I often play on his albums, and he makes really great sounding records. And He doesn't tour as much as he used to, but we're still great friends, and he does really wonderful stuff. He does brilliant stuff. His latest album is called Catharsis, and I play on that as well. I usually play on his albums. He usually asks me to do at least one track. So I'm still very proud to work with him because, you know, a lot of Spectral Mornings was crafted with him in mind. When I first met him, he had this small setup, and I said to him, "Oh, do you have a pipe organ sound? You know, because I really love that." And he said, "Yeah, it just so happens I do." And he came up with this really impressive sound, sounding very much like the organ that you heard on that last track. But he was able to do that from, I think it was a thing called a Roland string thing, where he'd hooked up the octaves on it, and I was hugely impressed with his control of sound. So we expanded his keyboard arsenal by adding a Mellotron and various monophonic synths, and I had great fun working with him, writing with him, and we made many albums together, many happy memories, and I'm due to see him in a couple of weeks, and I'm looking forward to that very much.
He's one of the greats, and for my listeners that aren't familiar with him, check out Nick Mangus. And Magnus, he's got some incredible solo stuff. And Steve, I didn't realize you played on a lot of that as well. Does he have something new that you're working on with him?
He's asked me to play some harmonica on some new stuff. He wants some chromatic harmonica, and yeah. I haven't done that yet. I haven't heard exactly what it is that he's been up to. But I'm fascinated to find out what he does, because he comes up with really extraordinary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, he did a re-record of something for me on the Defector album. There's a track called Hammer in the Sand. And I said to him, you know, we really should do a version of that with real orchestra one day, with real strings. And he said, well, I've done a re-record of this for you, and see if you like it. And I liked it very much, and we're going to add the real thing to it as well, and I think it'll sound very nice. And it'll probably go on my next studio album as a bonus track, as it's a re-record. There might be one or two bonuses, but there will be the new stuff as well. So I'm busy working on that every day at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, the live album, to jump back to that, which is the new product here. Was this one recording, one take? Did you do rehearsals? Did you do multiple dates and take the best tracks?
How live and how much overdub
was there? Was there any?
No, there isn't any overdubbing on it. It's you know, what you see is what you get. But we've done a whole ton of shows. We've been touring the world doing that set. And it took quite a while to get it to the point that it is. And so that show was from Hammersmith, and it just so happens that Roger King was able to mix something that sounded very good in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, what you see is what you get. So I'm very, very happy with that.
If there was ever an album that you needed to hear in its entirety, it has to be Selling England. What a great album it was from start to finish, the sequencing on it. And that seems to be an important thing to you, even on your solo albums. Your songs work together so well, to lead in and out.
Yeah, thank you. I'd say there's the feeling of, if you get the sequencing right on an album, there's a sense of a journey where each track seems to introduce the next, if you get the sequencing right, then you have the sense of something that follows. The pace will be sympathetic. There's no point really sticking two slow tracks side by side, it seems to me. Contrasts work very well, but you don't want to feel as though you've been in the same place.
Right.
So I try to do things that are often very quite a lot of contrast, and I think we did that with Genesis. I think it was part of the appeal, the sense of surprise that one thing might follow another. You could have the epics, but then, like on Selling England by the Pound, you have More Fool Me, which was just one guitar and Phil's voice, a little bit of harmony on it, Phil Collins' voice. But I thought, if we're going to do this live, let's expand that a little. So there's a couple of guitars and a couple of keyboards on it, but it's very much the spirit of the original. But just fleshed out a little bit so that we give it the attention that I feel it deserved in the first place.
You are releasing the new album on vinyl. I own two record stores, so I'm thrilled that we'll be able to have you, because we specialize in vinyl, that we'll be able to have this on the shelves. Are you going to go back and reissue any of your solo material on vinyl now that it's become more than a trend? It looks like it's here to stay again.
Yeah, there is some stuff. It's been mainly live stuff that's been issued or reissued on vinyl. There is a live show from the Royal Albert Hall, which has been remastered, and that's also out on vinyl. So there are some, and we tend to do studio albums on vinyl as well. We try and cater to all tastes. Some of the early stuff has been done, yes, it's hard to keep up with the demand for all of that. I mean, I have been involved with so many albums over the years,
mm-hmm.
and it is nice to be able to provide that again, just to, you know, the feel, the sound, the look, even the smell of vinyl. There's something about it, but you need a great turntable with it and a great pressing as well. So
right.
You take a lot more care over the pressings, whereas in the old days, sometimes you had recycled vinyl and it wasn't always clean sounding. So that's why people moved on to onto CD, of course, you know, mm-hmm. to get the pristine aspect and that when things went into silences, you didn't always need the grunge factor. But as I say, I try and release in all formats to keep everyone happy.
And, of course, you got to have your speakers not behind the TV when you play them.
Not behind the TV, ideally, yeah. Not under the cat, the TV, the sideboard. Yeah, in the basement. Not a good idea.
You left Genesis in 77 to start your solo yep. career. You have at least 32 albums out there now, by my count, counting the new one that's coming out that you had mentioned, which I do want to touch on to find out what we expect. But why? A lot of fans wondered, why did you leave Genesis in 77? The band was at its peak, so to speak, commercially. You were breaking big. You were touring. Was it that Peter was gone? What happened to the dynamic?
Well, I think that you're right to say that Peter had gone, and I made a solo album in 1975, which took off, and I imagined that every now and again I was going to make another solo album. But some of the guys in the band had a problem with me having a parallel solo career at that time, and in fact, I think they were quite annoyed that this thing that I'd done, Voyage of the Acolyte, the first one, had taken off. And so it made it very difficult for me. So I basically thought, well, there are no guarantees within this band. There's an awful lot of writers. And, you know, founder members were holding sway. And so I thought, for reasons of autonomy and self-respect, I felt that I owed my allegiance to music itself. I was aware that I was playing guitar in what I thought was the world's best band,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, to have less than a fully creative role within it and outside of it was going to mean I was going to have dead brain children, and that I felt I owed it to music itself.
Hmm.
I don't want to sound too pompous here, but,
right.
you know, basically... I love music and I love coming up with ideas. And all I can say is that everything that I've done since, the work that I've done with well-known people, the guys from Kansas, Richie Havens, Randy Crawford, masses and masses of people in the recent years, Stephen Wilson, and tons of albums that I'm on that I couldn't possibly keep count, you know.
Right.
So For me, you know, music is its own currency. I don't see success in terms of hit singles and all of that. You know, for me, what is successful is a great idea if some people get it.
Right.
That's the deal for me.
Well, Acolyte, you had, I mean, Phil and Mike played on that along with you and John. It surprises me that they would be a little taken back by the success of it, since they were contributing to it.
Well, it's part of the contradiction of Genesis to, you know, both help you and then
slap you.
It's weird. You know, that's
right.
Just the way it goes. Peter Gabriel wanted to have a parallel solo career, but ran into the same problem within factions within the band. So, of course, since those days, everyone has grown up a bit and everyone has solo careers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think no band can afford to hemorrhage members. Once you start losing half the team, that can be... yes, you can always see it that people are replaceable. But on the other hand, I think with groups, that can be very very difficult because there's band identity. It's not simply a case of employees. Bands don't work like that. So,
right. Well, that said...
So there was a sacrifice to be made. Either the choice was, you know, self-respect or toe the line, but keep your mouth shut and hope you get a song recorded every now and again.
Right. Well, we saw that happen with George Harrison as well. You know, George was so creative,
indeed,
and it didn't fit the Beatle format, so he did his own thing. And, of course, that was one of the cracks in the foundation there. But because of the fact you all have solo careers and you all have moved on and you all have grown up, so to speak, some later than others, does from a fan perspective, do you see the core of Genesis ever getting back together, even for a one-off album or a benefit or anything like that?
Well, I've always said that I was up for it. We did reconvene a very long time ago to help Peter Gabriel and the WOMAD Festival with the losses that they've made. But, you know, that's in the early 1980s, and then some of the guys joined to help me for a charity that I was promoting. So we have done, but I think that it will never be enough as far as fans are concerned. So I'm always open to that, but at the same time, rather than wait for that, you know, which may never happen, I prefer to honor the early music with the band. I mean, like, for instance, with Selling England by the Pound, there's an extra track that didn't get recorded that Peter Gabriel wanted us to do, and so it turned into a co-write between the two of us, and I've included that on this live version of the album, so that you get the complete Selling England by the Pound rather than the idea of the partial thing, which is the 1973 version of it.
Right.
You have
a video for it out as well.
That's right.
Deja Vu.
It's DVD, it's Blu-ray, so the whole thing will be there. And there's also a video for that track called Deja Vu. And I'm very proud of all of it.
Well, let's give the listeners a little sample of that, since it is something we've not heard. We're going to give you just a little bit of this. It's a 6.5-minute song. We'll give you about 2 minutes of it. We'll be back with Steve Hackett and talking more about his book and a new project that's helping the roadies that keep the rock rolling. All of that coming up on Midwest Beat. This is Deja Vu. Seems smaller
now I know not what you sow, you reap. And every day at last must die in sleep.
Deja Vu, that is captured live at Hammersmith. It's a brand new track, new recording from Selling England by the Pound and Spectrum Mornings live at Hammersmith. My guest, Steve Hackett, co-wrote that back in the early 70s, and that was supposed to be on the original studio album, correct, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was originally an idea that Peter Gabriel brought to the band, and it seemed to fall foul of band politics at the time, and we had no abundance of songs for Selling England. It was a very long album at the time. One of the sides was 29 minutes long, which was really pushing it in terms of what you could get onto vinyl. So it didn't quite make it out of the rehearsal room in finished form, but I finished it off some years later with Pete's blessing, and so it ended up being a 50-50 co-write with him. But I always thought that it was something that sounded potentially marvelous, and I was very disappointed when we didn't do it back then. But then it's given me an opportunity to do it now and give people an idea of a song that's had, you know, something like a 30 or 40 year history.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten feedback from Peter Gabriel on this version of it and the fact that it is now out there?
Well, I don't know if he knows that version. I probably ought to send it to him. Funny enough, I sent him a copy of my book because I wanted to know that I love him and I said nice things about him. And I've always got a soft spot for Pete. I think he was, you know, crucial to the appeal of early Genesis,
mm-hmm.
and as well as being a thoroughly nice guy, he is a great innovator, and he's been part of social change as well. You know, the songs that he wrote, not only with Genesis, which have social comment, but I think also, you know, his work on his certainly on his third and arguably his fourth album, songs like Biko and all of that. You know, suddenly it made, because that was such a big hit, it made apartheid uncool.
And, right.
And that's the power of music. That's the power of a top artist at the height of his game. And I can't speak highly enough of how I regard Pete. He's the guy that got me into Genesis in the first place. He's the guy who made the contact with me, phoned me up, seeing my ad in the paper, and just took a chance on me. So, I've got a lot of time still for Pete.
It's interesting. For my listeners, I just want to make them aware that Peter Gabriel Live, a classic live album in itself, is also now available on vinyl. It was just released in the last couple of weeks. So if you're a big fan of Peter, and I assume you probably are, check that out as well. Again, the quality of some of these new albums is just pristine. They finally got it right as far as the weight and the clarity and everything of this vinyl explosion that's happening. And Saturday, of course, is Record Store Day worldwide. So time to go out there and buy some of the vinyl. Steve Hackett is my guest, a guitarist formerly with Genesis. He's got over 30 albums out on his own. The new album that we're listening samples of, Selling England by the Pound and Spectral Mornings live at Hammersmith, due out September 25th. Multiple formats, vinyl, CD, DVD. DVD, Blu-ray, digipacks, box sets. I mean, everything. There's so many different ways to listen and enjoy this. And one of the things, I don't know if it's packaged with any of the music, but one of the things that's also new on your horizon is your book. You have an autobiography, A Genesis in My Bed. And I've got to say, it was a fun read. A lot of times musical biographies get a little heavy with some of the content and they get a little too music based for the novice, but it's only about 180 some pages and it's very clear, very concise, and you take us on a journey. I felt I was in your parents' kitchen when you were talking about the cupboards and the wallpaper and all of that, and then you take us on the journey of your travels. And at the end, you're talking about living in London, just a short distance from where it all began for you. I thought the coming of full circle was a beautiful way to tell your story.
I'm glad you liked the book. I had great fun writing it. I did quite a lot of rewrites because it's that very thing that you talk about. You know, you don't want to write a book too dry. So I thought maybe I'd try and write a book and make it entertaining for people who perhaps might not be interested in what the latest, you know, offering might be from a prog guitarist who's been around for a while. I thought, you know, what if someone just picked this book up off the shelf,
right?
And found surprisingly that although they might not be that interested in music as such, there would still be something there for them. I mean, I've been impressed with reading various autobiographies. I remember reading Rupert Everett, a couple of volumes of his stuff, and realizing it was very, very well written and intriguing. Very, very well written, marvelous descriptions of things, and whether or not you were a great fan of films and acting and all of that, nonetheless, the book was absolutely compulsory.
So how was it to sit back and re-examine your life? Was it cathartic? Did you have notes, or was this all from memory? Did you talk to your mom? Did you say, "Hey, mom, tell me about these days," or how did it come together?
Well, funnily enough, I've been notoriously bad at keeping dates for things, but there had to be some cross-referencing, some research to find out, you know, when certain dates were, and luckily, because of live shows, things are chronicled very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to dip into the chronology of it and try and keep a thread. My wife, who's a writer herself, said the best thing is to have a thread, some kind of thread between events. So it's a bit like writing bridge passages.
Doing
a long song, for instance, if you get the bridge passage right, you can stick together any two pieces of music, and separate events during a lifetime might fit in that category. So to give the thing flow, that was what she was keen on me doing. So I got failed quite a lot, and luckily, in the best possible sense, you know, she was guiding me. And although I wrote it all myself, she was, you know, happy to give me input into it. So I think, you know, she was very good, you know, a very good sounding board for this.
What kind of writing does Jo do?
She's written historical stuff. She's also done psychological stuff. She's also made films. She's very low-key, very, very modest, but very accomplished, and many times these days we write things together, and sometimes people think that melody lines that they hear that are really good, it sounds like it's maybe come from a masculine pen, but actually some of the heavier stuff, I mean, I know that you said you like the track Beasts in Our Time,
mm-hmm.
and the second half goes into a shuffle, with this really heavy bass pattern, and she's the one who wrote that, you know. So da 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 da, and she came up with it. I said, "Where did you get that from? You know, that sounds like you know, that's something for a big Swedish bass player to come in with Viking bass as he does on that, thundering away. And it's a brilliantly simple and yet driving riff that that really makes the second half of that song really take off. So she's a very, very, very clever girl, and we write lyrics together. Sometimes she'll come up with a top line, sometimes I will. But we're a bit like a band. We kick the football backwards and forwards.
I like that.
Yeah, we do that. We're not precious about our ideas. If we think that one of us has got a better idea, then I think, okay, fair enough. Yes, you're quite right. Or other times, you know, I'll press the point if I think I'm absolutely right. But
well, I think her first album with you was Shrouded, wasn't it? Shrouded Horizon.
Probably the first thing that she was credited with. Yeah.
Okay.
She had influence on some earlier stuff than that, but Shrouded. That's right. You start to see credits cropping up, not on every song, but on some things. And she's not pushy.
Were you the first that she song wrote with? I mean, you were talking about it was almost textbook style, the psychology, yeah, things like that. But as far as songwriting, are you her first songwriting partner, or was she doing this prior?
Yes, I am. Yeah, she was trained when she was a kid. Her father and her grandfather played violin, and so she was trained as a violinist as a kid. And she said to me, she realized early on she was never going to be a gifted violinist, but that she still heard melodies in her head, and she wanted desperately to be able to use those. And she said to me, oh, I often think that I know where a melody should go, and musicians usually tend to sort of groove away on the same melody and don't get into variations in the way that perhaps they could. And so it's interesting that, you know, she's as rigorous in her way with her approaches as I am in mine. And and so I often know what she's going to say. She's going to want a variation and not just a straight repeat, unless there's a very good reason for it with a changed chord pattern underneath it. But that's how we work.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of the live version of Beasts in Our Time. We've been listening to it underneath our dialogue here. Let's bring it up a little bit, Jose. Beasts in Our Time, that's the live version, a little snippet of it there from the forthcoming album on September 25th. It's off the latest solo album from Steve Hackett called At the Edge of Light. And Steve, tell us a little bit about the new solo album that's going to follow At the Edge of Light. You had mentioned it earlier in the interview that you were working on a new solo album.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, you know, because of not being able to tour, I've worked on an acoustic album with a lot of orchestral stuff on it, and that's going to be out at the beginning of next year. But meanwhile, having finished that, I'm also working on an electric studio album with all the bells and whistles. So the acoustic album, or the orchestral album, I should say, basically it's nylon guitar, so it's something that was finished a few weeks ago, and ever since then I've been working very, very hard on new rock stuff. But I guess the link has been orchestra and orchestral textures. Mm-hmm. I've been fascinated with that. Recently, funnily enough, I just bought another Chinese koto. I was using that back in the days of Spectral Mornings. Now, funnily enough, I bought this thing, and they said, oh, you know, you've bought the Chinese harp. And then there was a picture, of course, that was out on Facebook, and a guy wrote to me the other day and said, actually, it's not a koto. What you've got is a Vietnamese instrument. It's a Vietnamese zither, which they pronounce as the Dain Shain. And so this thing sounds absolutely glorious. It's really quite lovely. It's an extraordinary thing. It's like all the mysticism of the East that you could possibly want. So I've been working on something that features that. And it's one of the things I'm very excited about, working with ethnic instruments as well as electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. You embraced world music a while back. A lot of your solo albums have different elements of different cultures.
That's right.
Last Train to Istanbul, for instance. You have that Turkish groove. I think Chris Squire, was he on that album?
Yes, Chris Squire was on that album, and
that was one of his last recordings.
Chris and I did quite a few things together. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Your albums, as you go through the evolution of Steve Hackett as a solo artist, the growth and the revisiting is just, it's trademark. So many artists will put something out and you say, oh yeah, that's so and so, or oh yeah, that's so and so. Sounds like they could have been done at the same sessions. Yours always show a steady growth, a continuous experimentation, if you will, a re-education of Steve, perhaps as a musician, absorbing like a sponge different aspects. That's something unique about you, where a lot of musicians want, again, success and hits. They stay to the formula. You don't seem to like to be in a box. You seem to let the music just take you where it will, and where it lands you is not that important as the journey.
Absolutely, yeah. The journey musically reflects the outer journey of having traveled to so many of these places. But the instruments equally are important to me. So I've spent quite a bit of time in Hungary, in Brazil, working with different people who exhibit different skills. One guy from Azerbaijan who plays a thing called the tar, T-A-R, and that's shown up on quite a few of my albums. Also, there was a girl sitar player, Shima Mukherjee, who is, a sitar virtuoso, and she's on At the Edge of Light and playing absolutely wonderfully. She came in, played her solo in one go, and that was it. You know,
Wow. No
fixes. Nothing, just an extraordinary virtuoso. And so in recent years, what has been wonderful is people finding me at times, like, for instance, a duduk player who's from Armenia, where the instrument is from, got in touch and said, oh, you know, you're coming to Paris. That's where I'm living at the moment. Let's get together at your show. And unfortunately, we didn't get to hook up, but we were still mailing each other, and I said, well, you know, I'm working on this acoustic album, and again, something with a kind of Turkish feel to it, and would you like to play the duduk on that? So he plays the introduction, and then we hand it to other instruments, to Rob Townsend, who takes it on with, after the orchestral instruments, takes it on with soprano sax, and so it grows, and you're quite right, the journey is the important thing, and the idea that the music morphs and that the music should be full of surprises. I think this is it. Music having the art of surprise, as we had with the Beatles at their most psychedelic, full of surprises, as we had with King Crimson, full of surprises, that first album, as we had with Genesis, with many of the albums, full of surprises. So I think that's always the challenge for music and musicians. It's you're going to be surprised, hopefully, the first time you hear something. Wasn't expecting that. What was that? You know
the song that did that for me from your canon of work was Hogweed. When I heard Hogweed, it blew my mind. I'm like, oh, my God. And it was off the live album, the live Genesis album.
And yeah, the live version of that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. Quality of recording, not so great, but the song and the delivery and the topic itself, I mean, it was just a trip. And that was probably, gosh, seventh grade, eighth grade, somewhere around there. And that was the first thing that turned me on to Genesis and got me into prog rock, if you will. I hate that term, prog rock, but it, for lack of a better sense, experimental style of rock and roll. And you've worked with so many great people of that style of music, of that genre. One that I don't think you've worked with that I would love to see a collaboration with while he's still out there doing it, a friend of this show that's been on many times, is Ian Anderson. You mentioned Budapest and Hungary. He has done the same kind of thing where he's embraced all these wonderful world musicians. And have you done anything with Ian?
Well, funnily enough, we showed up on one or two albums by David Palmer, who is now D. Palmer. And so we know each other, and not that long ago we had dinner together with his son and his wife. And Atal were always a very interesting band, always did, you know, amazing live performances, and that is extraordinary. Yes. I guess the thing is that even though certain guys have been around for a long time, doesn't mean to say that they can't still surprise you.
Right. And Ian is one of those that continues to surprise me, as do you, with this brilliant live album. And I'm looking forward to hearing the solo stuff. One thing I did want to touch on briefly, and we talked Tuesday with Ross the Boss from the Dictators and Manowar metal group, and that is the Six String Salute. You are part of that, and I got to commend you on that so many wonderful musicians are remembering the guys and gals that keep the rock rolling, the tour road rats, as Charlie Daniels used to call them, they keep it going. And this is a fundraiser. What are you doing for that project?
We're selling T-shirts, and the proceeds go to our crew, who are hurting financially at the moment. So I'm very proud to say that the first run sold out, and then the second run sold out. So we're getting some more made, and all that money goes to the crew. So there's no secret about that. And I'm very happy to do. I figure it's the least that I can do. You know, it's not costing me anything. And I think if people are investing in that, then they know it's going to a good cause. Because you know what a state the live touring industry is in. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's hurting, of course.
Right. And we always, you know, think of the musicians who aren't out there, and there's a lot of local and regional acts that are doing these virtual concerts and putting out a virtual tip jar. But the guys that actually keep it going on and the real scene, they're struggling. Yeah. And I saw a video on YouTube where it showed a bunch of crew guys pushing flight cases down the street and saying, "Don't forget us." And that had such impact. You know, as someone who does concerts out here, I sometimes forgot that these guys are hurting as well. So let's remember them. And you can find out all this information on hackettsongs.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's the website. Yes.
Can we get the shirts there too to help out the guys?
It'll point to the web store where you can order the shirts direct. And as I say, all proceeds go to the very deserving crew.
Okay. Steve, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time all the way in England, and you're calling us here in Indiana and for NPR Radio. We love your music. We wish you well and continued good health, that you continue to keep making all this great music you've done.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been great talking to you once again. Thank you.
Well, we're going to leave you with the live version of the song that opened up Selling England by the Pound. And again, we're going to send this out to our listener, Skyler, who's listening today, one of the biggest Genesis fans and Steve Hackett fans we know. Dancing with the Moonlit Night. Steve Hackett has been my guest. HackettSongs.com for everything, Steve, you need to know. All right, Steve, goodbye and good luck.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right. Thank you. All right, listeners, let's enjoy it as we take it out with this song, Dancing with the Moonlit Night. Again, this is Steve Hackett with an incredible band, and it's from the live recording coming out September 25th, live at Hammersmith, Selling England by the Pound and Spectral Mornings. I'm Lounges. I'm out of here. Enjoy the music.
He traded in his pride. Paper lane, cried a voice in the crowd. Old man dies, the note he left was signed old Father Thomas. It seems his drought, selling England by the pound. Cities as hope and glory. Time goes by, it's the time of your life. Easy now, sit you down.